Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next few hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Michael Kaufman, who, of course, is going to be talking to us about his new film, goes into the background of global warming. It's a fascinating film. We have Gary, another film that he's put out going into, of course, the global warming, and has to do with this move towards world government. But this is certainly titled Emerging Science, Global Warming, Emerging Science. President Obama has said the reason we're fighting in Afghanistan today is because Al-Qaeda is there, and, well, maybe they're up in Pakistan, but Al-Qaeda is plotting against the United States, and that's why we have to send our boys halfway around the world to fight Al-Qaeda, because they're plotting against us. Well, of course, fallacy in that argument is Al-Qaeda is in about 40 nations throughout the world, and the more we go over there and try to mold their society into a democratic society and try to destroy their beliefs and their culture, why, the more people we recruit to the other side, to the point of view of Al-Qaeda. In fact, Al-Qaeda is an outgrowth of the Mujahideen, who were organized in the 1980s by the CIA. But the major threat to America is not from Al-Qaeda, no matter how militant some of those people may be. The major threat to America is coming from within. There are people in America who are plotting on the destruction of our way of life. And they're using a fraud called global warming and justify transforming our society by this threat of global warming. And, of course, what this means, if we were to do what President Obama has suggested, and that is we were to cut back our energy production to, I think, 80% of what it was in 1990, it would mean we would have to deindustrialize our society, literally all of our industries, anything that had anything to do with the use of energy and electricity would have to move offshore. You certainly can't generate enough electricity from wind and solar to provide for an industrialized society, and of course they know that. But basically this is an attack on the very foundation of our nation. People would have to lower their living standards, not use electricity for air conditioning and for heat and for the other things. In fact, they're intentionally, and the plan is already there, to raise the electricity rates for the average individual and to destroy the industrial base of our nation and to ship it throughout the world, all in the name of protecting us from the ravages of global warming. And with that as a background, Michael Kaufman, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, glad to be back with you, Pastor. Pastor.
Yo, that's all right. Go ahead, Pastor. No, hardly at all. Anyway, Michael, it's good to have you with us. You pick up the story because you've been working so hard to get this information out and to warn the people what's coming down the line.
You know, right now, the United Nations is having a major negotiating session in Bonn, Germany, that I've attended in the past. Next week, and they're going to start putting together a new Kyoto Protocol, whatever it turns out to be, and the guidelines that have been released by the United Nations just came out, made public today, basically show that they are going to basically reinvent the world, literally control, command and control. It's all, you know, it's written in bureaucraties, yes, in a way that is stultifying, but nonetheless, it is very, very dangerous. They're talking about changing and taxing the airlines and so forth, and if they're not having any problems now, they will really have problems when they start taxing them. Taxing just horrible trillions of dollars of new taxes and impositions and so forth for the first world nations around the world, in order to support what is going on in the third world.
And basically it's a matter of lowering the living standards in first world nations so that the people in third world nations can live better.
Yes.
Well, Michael, you go right ahead.
Well, as we have talked about in the past, Stan, it's one of those issues that we really need to be focused on, because, you know, when we stopped the biodiversity treaty back in 1994 by using the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which you do have for sale, they actually talked about setting up a system that is a command and control, more or less like a pattern after the feudal system of Europe. It's where you have a few of the royalty that can take all the plums of the world, and the rest of the population is serfs. They basically said in this Global Biodiversity Assessment that that was okay, that we could, you know, that would not impact the Earth that much. And that is what their objectives basically are, is to turn us into serfs. And we need to recognize these people are very serious. And most of them actually think they're so deluded that they think they're doing the right thing. There's no question about it. But when you actually look at the science, what this DVD, this new DVD, Global Warming, Emerging Science and Understanding, really goes into, there is no science supporting man-caused global warming. The whole thing is a fraud. And I'll say that very, very firmly at this particular point in time. You know, when we first started talking about global warming, what, 7 or 8 years ago, that I was a little cautious because there was some indication that man could still be involved. There is no indication of that right now, none whatsoever. The last couple of years, the science that's come out in the last couple of years, the emerging science, has basically totally and absolutely discredited the whole concept of man-caused global warming. It's just not happening. It's natural. And in fact, if you've been kind of cold these last couple of years, there's good reason, because we are in a cycle, very likely, it's still too early to tell, but it's very likely we're in a cycle of global cooling now for the next 30 years. And as a consequence, they're desperate to try to get this whole political package put together in time in order to convince us that we have to support this, to get the legislation and the treaties and so forth in place before the people finally wake up and realize, you know, there hasn't been any global warming. What are they talking about? They're desperate. Every time somebody comes out with a new study that shows that global warming, they call them a kook, they call them a crackpot, they call them everything they can, because the only thing that they can use to justify what they're doing is demonization of the opposition. They have no scientific evidence whatsoever. And it really is very serious from the standpoint. We're seeing now where we're talking about at least $3,000 per family is going to cost us if Obama's legislation goes through that he wants to do. That's a year, every single year. You're talking about...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dr. Michael Kaufman is talking about the fact that there is no scientific evidence that mankind has produced global warming. In fact, in the last few years, we seem to be moving into a global cooling time, and you've been watching what's going on up there in Fargo, North Dakota. Why, of course, you notice that the snow's on the ground, it's freezing cold up there, and here this is well into moving towards the end of March, and yet all across this country, in fact, many parts of the world, we have global cooling, not global warming, but of course, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough, and you control the newspapers. And really, this is one of those beautiful examples of control of the medium, because you will never hear the truth, you know, through the regular media or on the major outlets, television. The only time you're going to hear it on radio is in alternative radio. People, of course, working as I do, and on shortwave, the internet, on satellite. And this is how we get the truth out, and of course, you have to help us reach the people. But go ahead and pick up this story, Michael, because what if this goes through, they will literally lower the living standards of everybody within the range of my voice. What we could do, of course, we could have nuclear power and maintain our industrial base. Did you notice that Barack Obama doesn't mention nuclear power? Oh, we're going to have wind power. We're going to have you know, solar power. Well, it's going to cost $1 trillion for the wind. It's going to cost $1 trillion for the solar, and then they're going to have to reconstruct the grids, and that'll cost $1 trillion. Where is all this money coming from? And why would we do that when it's so much cheaper and more efficient to have nuclear power? And they give you all the reasons why we can't have nuclear power. We don't know what to do with the exhausted fuel. Well, why don't we do what everybody else in the world does? Why don't we just recycle it? Well, they have no good excuse as not to recycle it. They don't want you to know it can be recycled. The next response would be, well, would you want a nuclear reactor in your backyard? And I'll never forget one time that the young man pulled that on me, and I said, well, look, my son served on an aircraft carrier. And it was a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. He actually lived right very close to a nuclear reactor that powered that aircraft carrier for a number of years. And I'll tell you, when I used that explanation, the fellow got so angry he just stomped away, wouldn't talk to me anymore. Because they've conditioned the minds of people to hate nuclear power, to associate it with a mushroom cloud. And I'm going to be quiet, Michael. You go right ahead.
We opened up so many avenues of dialogue here that I'm not sure quite which one to take, but you're absolutely correct. They just hate nuclear power. Why? I'm not quite sure. It's one of the safest and most environmentally friendly technologies available. The only thing that is a negative to it, and it's not a real negative, it's a conceived or preconceived negative, and that is the terror aspect of it, of trying to convince someone that they should live next to a nuclear power plant, you know, say 10 miles or something of that nature. And there's many of these nuclear plants around already. People live next to them. There's no problem. 10 Mile Island, as you recall, it turned out the safety features, the double and triple safety features, worked perfectly. There was never any real danger. It's the rogue nations like Russia back in 15 years ago, where it didn't have those safety precautions and had poorly built nuclear facilities that had the tragedies and so forth. We're not going to have those. And we go back to the renewable energy, wind and solar that you talked about. It is ludicrous. I've done a very thorough analysis of the potential of that form of energy. Now, maybe in 50 years we'll have the technology that it can change. I don't know. But it does not exist now. The only way we can have solar, any kind of a great extent that is, or have wind, is you're going to be paying three times the cost for your electricity that you're paying right now. It is, unless it's fully subsidized by the government, and of course that's how they get around, that's how they did the biofuels, is they basically subsidize it enormously in order to give us that 15% or 10% biofuels that we've had the last 5 years.
Well, because I think people have to understand that they're going to run up the cost of electricity so you can't afford to use it, and so that industry will not be able to use it, and they're simply going to move to countries where energy, where power is readily available. And, of course, it's readily available in Europe. It's readily available in China. In fact, we are subsidizing and guaranteeing the payment for the nuclear power plants that Westinghouse is building in China today. We are putting up the money for it. But, of course, we can't have nuclear power in America. What sort of madness is that unless there's another agenda? Go ahead.
And that you're absolutely correct, because the only way that we could ever get to 20% that Obama is talking about here in the next few years is by very definitely subsidizing it right up to the hilt, and it's going to cost you trillions of dollars again. You know, Stan, I have kind of come to the conclusion that what we're seeing unfolding these past 100 days of the first days of the administration is a Keystone Cop scenario. If you can just envision these cops running around throwing trillions of dollars here and trillions of dollars there and trillions of dollars over the other place, you got a pretty good idea of what is happening right now. I have never seen anything like it, or have even heard of anything like it. It is unbelievable what's going on right now.
I think the premier of Czechoslovakia said it best, although he got terrible criticism for it. But the premier of Czechoslovakia said, speaking of what Obama is doing, it is the road to hell. It is the road to hell. I mean, it will destroy, of course, the financial stability of our nation, and with that, of course, the financial stability of the world. Now, he wasn't supposed to say that sort of thing. When you're a politician, you're not supposed to tell the truth. He told the truth. He was censored by his parliament. But I suspect they have some of the finest politicians that money could buy there in Czechoslovakia, and that our officials were over there passing out money like it was running out of style. You know, $1 million here, $1 million there. I mean, don't think that they don't sort of do that sort of thing. You remember when they want to get through the TARP legislation, and Congress voted down the $700 billion that Henry Paulson asked for so we could stop the home foreclosures? And when Congress voted it down, they brought the bill back 5 days later with $150 billion added. $150 billion. The new legislation was no longer $700 billion. It was $850 billion. They got 55 votes. I figure that's about $2.25 billion for every vote that they were able to turn. That's how Washington, D.C. really works. The congressmen all got benefits for their local communities to the tune, on average, of $2.25 billion. Go right ahead.
Yes, it is. And it's tragedy in the making. We're seeing this. And, of course, the global warming issue is right smack in the middle of it. The United Nations is moving for a new Kyoto Protocol in December. They're talking about it next week. Everything is coming together, the G20, and I almost bet either this meeting or the next one, they'll come out and say, well, we have to have a new global currency. We have to have a new financial architecture. I've been following this for over 15 years now, and it's just a matter of when they wanted to bring it out. It's all been planned. It's all been orchestrated right for the last 15 years, and it's going to be centered either in the IMF or in the Bank of International Settlements, one or the other. I hear, you know, at different times, I hear different things. But it's going to be one of those two places. And you're going to see that come out in the next couple of months, and maybe next week even. It's been planned for decades, and we're just now seeing it. Why? Because they had to create a catastrophe in order to get the American people and the people of the world to buy into it and go along with it as their last resort in saving ourselves. It would be absolutely pathetically funny if it wasn't so deadly serious. And here we are, and we're about to have a world government very, very closely, within maybe months, certainly within a year. I can't see it any other way.
But what people don't understand is we do move towards a new world currency. You know, everybody say, well, I'm going to turn in one of my dollars and got to get one of the new ones. Well, you may turn in your dollar and you may get one of the new ones, but of course you may get back 3 cents on the new dollar. People don't understand what happens when you destroy a currency, and that is what the Obama, of course, not just Obama, George Bush and Bill Clinton and all the other presidents bear a share of the responsibility. But we have never had spending like we have the Obama administration. George Bush was bad. Obama, President Obama, is unbelievable. I mean, he is talking about a $3.6 trillion budget superimposed upon a $787 billion stimulus bill, superimposed upon $350 billion they had left over from the Bush administration in TARP funds, superimposed upon almost $2 trillion more they're going to spend to try to buy up the toxic assets. Ladies and gentlemen, you're talking about an unbelievable amount of money. And then there's another $9 trillion. We don't even know where that's come from. $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. And pretty soon, you're talking about worthless money. And that's where we're headed. There's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch its currency. Go right ahead, Michael.
And that is so true. And last week, they began a process of just basically monetizing the debt, which basically means for every dollar they spend at this point is a... It devalues the currency that much, and because it's not being loaned. Nobody's backing this. China's not buying it. We're just printing money. Just printing money off the printing presses. And as you said, when you debauch the currency, you destroy the nation. And we are well on our way. And you watch, in the next 6 months, we will have to have this new international financial architecture to save ourselves.
Well, I wonder if we're going to be able to save ourselves, but then I sometimes wonder if God is just, why he hasn't intervened before. So we're going to be back in just a moment with Michael Kaufman, and we're going to get back on the subject of global warming, which is what his DVD is all about. We're carrying it now. We think it is an excellent source of information. It's Global Warming Emerging Science, because, ladies and gentlemen, the science shows that everything Al Gore says is really a bit of a lie. But then Al Gore is making a lot of money off of this. He's selling, involved in the selling of carbon credits, which means that if you want to pollute, you just buy the carbon credit, and then you can pollute all you want to. Isn't that wonderful? And Al Gore has got the biggest smile on his face you ever saw. We'll be right back. Well, Michael, why don't we get back, of course, to our major subject tonight, and I'd love to talk on all these other things with you, but let's talk about global warming and why what Al Gore...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
In truth, Al Gore points out that he's got this great big chart. He shows the relationship between CO2 going up and temperature going up, and they go up together. I mean, you see the CO2 go up, you see the temperature go up at the same time. But what he does not tell you is that if you superimpose the charts over 60,000 years or whatever it is, why we find that the temperature goes up and then followed by the CO2 level going up. In other words, it is the temperature drives the CO2, not the CO2 driving the temperature. Would you explain to our listeners why that occurs? Why, when the temperature goes up, does the level of CO2 in the air go up?
It's a very, very well-known physical phenomenon that we've known for probably 100 years or more, is that as the temperature of the water gets colder, it can absorb more carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
And the greatest store of carbon dioxide in the world are the oceans. And so it's just like heating up a bottle of pop. Why, of course, it eventually explodes. You heat up seawater, and it gives off carbon dioxide, and that is the reason that the level of CO2 goes up. Not because of global warming. I mean, it is because of global warming. It isn't causing the global warming.
Absolutely. When the ocean warms up, because there's more sunlight striking its surface, not because... There is no way, as you well know, if you remember your high school chemistry classes or physics classes, that the latent heat in the atmosphere could ever warm up the ocean. It's just impossible. The latent heat of the ocean is thousands of times greater than it is for the atmosphere. There is no way that global warming of the atmosphere can ever warm up the ocean. It just can't happen. But what can happen, and is apparently happening, is that when you have fewer clouds, you have more sunlight actually reaching the ocean surface, the ocean can warm. When you have more clouds and the clouds and the sunlight is reflected back out into space, you have less reaching the ocean and the ocean cools. And that's what drives the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's not the other way around. It's very, very clear, very simple. We explain it very well in this DVD, and I've shown it to hundreds of high school kids, and they love it. And I'm trying to get this into all of our high schools, because now there are teachers in the high school systems that would never ever believe in what I'm saying. I mean, they're just convinced global warming is a religion to them, and you're not going to convince them any other way. But the vast majority of teachers want to have good material to show their kids. And this is, from what I hear and the feedback I'm getting, a lot of feedback from around the world, around the world now, that this is a tremendous DVD, not only for general audiences, adult audiences, but fantastic for kids. It really is. I've had kids tell me as young as 12 years old that they were spellbound by this thing, because it's so well done, and the fact that it's very easy to understand. A lot of graphics. I have the sun show exploding and all the rest and so forth, so it's very entertaining as well. And there are dozens and dozens of scientists on this showing and telling exactly what's going on. So it's really hard to refute, and I'm hoping against hope that somehow some kind of truth gets into our public school systems. I know it's going to be a big hit with our homeschoolers, because the homeschoolers will lap this kind of thing up because they're looking for the truth. But I'm hoping to get some element of truth back into our public school systems too.
Well, I think it's very, very well done. We've watched it, and my wife and myself and my son watched it, and it really, Chris, it was easy to understand, but you have to have something that'll hold people's attention. So we certainly, we actually going to be carrying this DVD. We think it's an important weapon in our armamentarium to try to make people understand that America is under attack today. But we're under attack from people in this country who want to destroy the infrastructure of this country, to lower the living standards of America, and of course to deindustrialize America, because our industry cannot exist without electricity and power.
It just can't, and it's unfortunate, but it's one of those things where I'm seeing the demise of the United States if we continue going down this road more than a couple of years. I cannot believe and what is happening in our government right now. When you pass a $1 trillion bill without even looking at its language, that is criminal, and every one of our congressmen and senators ought to be thrown out of office. They deserve to be thrown out of office by the American people. But the American people are so desperate for some sort of solution, they won't even bat an eye, because they think the Messiah Obama is going to rescue them.
Well, I'm afraid we're in for real trouble. Somebody asked if there's a relationship between HARP and global warming. I don't think so. You're only heating up a minuscule part of the stratosphere. Give us a call if you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Dr. Michael Kaufman. We're talking about his new DVD, Global Warming, Emerging Science, because the science is there very, very clearly. Could you talk a little bit about carbon dioxide? And certainly we're told, you know, oh, my goodness, this is a terrible pollutant, and, you know, it's doing all this damage. It's one of the greenhouse gases. Could you explain to our listeners what greenhouse gases are and what part of greenhouse gases the CO2 is, and then what part of the actual atmosphere CO2 is?
Well, I think most people understand that greenhouse gases are those gases that allow short-wave energy from the sun to penetrate but block the long-wave energy emitted by the Earth back out into space. So it acts somewhat like a greenhouse. Having said that, there are about a half a dozen major greenhouse gases. You have carbon dioxide, which you're very familiar with, methane, nitrous oxide, a couple others like that. But the biggest one, by order of several magnitudes, is water vapor and clouds. I mean, it's water vapor and clouds. You cannot get away from it. It's not carbon dioxide. Water vapor and clouds account for up to 86% of all of the greenhouse gas potential. I'm not talking about the actual concentrations in the atmosphere. Different greenhouse gases have different potentials. Methane, for instance, is 25 times more efficient than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. And water vapor is not as effective as greenhouse gas as far as its greenhouse abilities. But nonetheless, even saying that, it's up to 86% of all the greenhouse gas potential is water vapor and clouds. At most, carbon dioxide is 27%.
Wait a minute, 27 or 2.7?
No, I'm going to get to that point in a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's 27% because it has a fairly good potential compared to water vapor. That's the maximum. We're talking about anywhere from 66 to 86% for water vapor and 9% to 27% for carbon dioxide. So there's variability. However, the man-caused carbon dioxide is less than 3% of all the carbon dioxide that's emitted every year by planet Earth. And so when you apply that to the 27%, the most that you could have is 0.8%, less than 1%. Of all the greenhouse gases could be potentially caused by man. Less than 1% could be as low as 0.4% or 0.3%. So you're talking about an infinitesimal amount of greenhouse potential caused by man compared to all the other natural sources. And as a result of that, it's almost impossible to...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sidney Michael is just saying that the man, as far as CO2 is concerned, man produces very little of the CO2 that is actually in the atmosphere. What percentage of the CO2 in the atmosphere is actually produced by mankind?
It's about 1%.
About 1% of the CO2 in the atmosphere is actually produced by man. So most of this, of course, is produced actually by products, certainly. Nature produces it. The ocean produces it. So man is producing very, very little of it. So go right ahead with the scenario.
So the fact that the oceans are emitting carbon dioxide, absorbing carbon dioxide, you have carbon dioxide given off by forests, by decomposition in the litter layer of forest and around the earth, grasslands and so forth. All of these things emit carbon dioxide, and the amount that man emits is only, well, I said 1%, it's really about 3% of all the carbon dioxide that's emitted. But when you look at the potential for as a greenhouse gas, you're looking at less than 1% is caused by mankind and the burning of fossil fuels. It's infinitesimally small. On the other side of the ledger, let's just talk about carbon dioxide and its benefits. It's been labeled as of this last week as a pollutant by the EPA. Now, once a gas is labeled a pollutant by the EPA, The EPA has the right to regulate it. Well, you may not realize it, or you may have forgotten it from your high school science class, but every time we breathe out carbon dioxide. Therefore, we are polluters, every single one of us. Major polluters, as a fact, a matter of fact. And as a result of that, it throws the doors wide open to all the environmental nutcases out there to start throwing lawsuits at every manufacturer, every human activity, and so forth, until they grind us down to the deindustrialization that Dr. Stan was talking about at the beginning of the program. It is wide open now because of what the EPA has done.
And now every one of you will become an enemy of the state because you are a polluter. After all, you're living, you're giving off CO2, as is every animal. And, of course, you hear a lot of this about, oh, we've got to do something about the methane, you know. Why sheep belch methane? Of course, the cows pass the methane out through their intestinal tract. It is the cows that are really responsible. But I mean, the absurdities of all the things they're putting out there is simply to confuse the American people, and they cloud this under the concept of, well, it's scientific evidence. You must understand the people in Washington, D.C. today are the enemy. They want to destroy this nation. So first of all, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Dr. Kaufman, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And then, of course, I want to mention the fact that the scientists, about 33,000 scientists, have now signed a petition put out by our good friend Art Robinson saying there is absolutely no scientific evidence that mankind has any effect on global warming. In other words, mankind is not producing the problem. 33,000 scientists. Al Gore says, who's not a scientist, there is no scientific question about this. The only people who would question what I am saying are they're doubters. They're doubters, and they use that term with total, the most derogatory terms of he's a doubter. Well, I'll tell you what, there are an awful lot of scientists who are a doubter, and there are very, very few honest scientists who support these concepts. Those who do sign up usually work for government, or they've been bought off, and there are very, very, there's only a couple of thousand of those at the most. So basically, if you'd like to talk to Dr. Kaufman, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Michael, before we go on, I want you to get your website out there and let people know how to get in touch with your ministry.
If you go to discerningtoday.org, that's D-I-S-C-E-R-N-I-N-G, today.org, discerningtoday.org, you'll find on that the link that goes to our Global Warming Emerging Science webpage, and you can take a look, and we have tremendous amount of information there for students or for anybody that's interested, as well as this DVD, and we have it in two different forms that you can get, and it is really a opportunity that I think, if I've ever really stood and shouted from the mountaintops that we need to get this DVD distributed, it's this one. Because it really does engage the students, it engages audiences, it can begin the process of throwing doubt onto what's being said by our government, and begin to challenge our government for the accuracy in what they're doing. I can't really say enough about how important this particular issue is. Now, there are other issues that are equally important, don't get me wrong, but this one can come back and bite us. If we give control of our economy to the United Nations, as we're planning on doing at this moment, this is what is being planned right now in the White House and in the Congress, we can just kiss it off and just say it's goodbye. Because if without an economy, if whoever controls carbon dioxide emissions controls us, period. It's as simple as that. You can't get much more simple. And it's important that kids, it's important that adults understand the science behind this just is totally and absolutely lacking, that man is causing it. We do not need all of this legislation that is being proposed right now. We do not need the treaties that are being proposed at the international level. We just don't need them. It's ludicrous to think that we can actually accomplish controlling global warming in the first place, but we definitely don't need it because man is not causing it. In fact, we're probably in a 30-year cooling cycle right now.
So we've got to get this all through before and it becomes so obvious to everybody that global cooling is here. Of course, they have a new line. They call it, well, it's not really global warming, it's climate change. And everybody knows it's the CO2 that's responsible for climate change. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and you control the media and you control education and you control the politicians, an awful lot of people are going to believe, unless they listen to our programs or see Michael's material, and he has two excellent DVDs, both of which we carry. We got a couple of books. We think it's so vitally important that you become informed and you help us inform others. Well, we've got a genie and calling from Aptos. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, genie. How are you doing?
Good to have Dr. Kaufman on this evening. I was wondering, Dr. Kaufman, have you heard about they're bringing the big guns out now, the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles?
Oh, yes.
And he just completed a 10-day tour of South America. This article was in the Telegraph in Britain, and he was saying, I find it incomprehensible that there are those who doubt the science of climate change.
Not climate change, not global warming, it's climate change.
Right.
You notice
right.
that. Go ahead.
And so here is a guy that I believe Al Gore has been discredited, ridiculed. Now the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, is coming out and saying, oh, if you doubt global warming or climate change, then there's something wrong with you. And he was down, when he made this speech, he was down in Santiago, Chile, about 10 days ago. And so here we have the big royalty coming out and saying this has to be applied to the corporations. And Dr. Stan, I have to mention about Joan Vion, the Sustainable Prince, the little booklet, the book that she put out. It talks about how Prince Charles, his leadership forum, his business leadership forum, is composed of corporations throughout the whole world. And this is, he is planning to change the behavior of people who work for the corporations. And I wonder if Dr. Kaufman could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, in fact, I would recommend Joan Vion's book and her DVDs. They're outstanding. They're excellent. They provide tremendous amount of depth and understanding what's happening, especially on the financial level. She does get into global warming a little bit, but really that's my field. Hers is the world of finance, and she does a yeoman's job in this. And she recognizes that Prince Charles has been one of the people that's been orchestrating this whole thing from above as a puppeteer for the last 35 years. He is definitely up there doing this, and of course is now starting to drop the gauntlet, as it were, on big businesses and so forth, telling them they have to conform to this, or under the table he's saying this, you're going to go out of business. I'll make sure you go out of business. And that's the kind of threats that are being made right now to our corporations. I used to work for a corporation in another lifetime, and you can't believe how susceptible they are to this kind of threat, because all they have to do is to get bad press and bad publicity, and they are out of business. And as a consequence, they take Prince Charles very seriously, and they try to carve out a business opportunity for themselves. Now, they can probably do it. The big guys on the block, the inter-multinational, transnational corporations probably have enough weight behind them that they can wade their way through this garbage and come out at the other end. It's the small guys that will be the casualties. And this is what is really being planned more than anything else, is they're getting rid of all the competition in the world. They're only going to be the big guys left when this is all over, and they're going to have us by the throat. This is just simple as that. There is no question in my mind that this is it's happening at every level. It's happening in agriculture. It's happening everything. Is that they are passing these kinds of horrendous pieces of legislation that a small entrepreneur or a small business just cannot survive. They cannot do the paperwork and all that's accompanying it with it. They cannot They cannot survive it. They just can't. And so that only leaves the big guys, and once they have the control, of course, then all of our prices are going to go up, and we will be serfs. I'll guarantee you that we'll be serfs in comparison to what we've had the last 30 years.
Well, I'm looking forward to looking and listening to your DVD, Dr. Kaufman.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jeannie. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, let's go to Michael. Or is that Michael or Michelle calling from Riverside?
Yeah, it's Michael.
Michael. Okay, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say I have a couple of Dr. Kaufman's books, and they're just excellent. I recommend everybody get the DVD, and also your books are just tremendous. Had something that I noticed that's missing from the discussion tonight, and that is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the CO2 levels, I think it'd be wonderful if they went up.
Yes, I was going to get to that.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, there are greenhouses that will pipe in CO2 and artificially control the atmosphere so that there are elevated levels and everything goes into hyperdrive.
I think, Michael, the thing is we should recognize that CO2 is a miracle gas. It really is
a miracle gas.
It makes everything grow better and flowers grow more beautiful. The CO2 is a miracle gas, and they want to do away with the miracle gas. Go right ahead.
Better than Miracle-Gro, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, last 2 weeks ago, I was at the International Summit on Climate Change in New York City and was talking to some of the leading CO2 experts in the world. They had people from all over the world. And every one of them has said basically that we have increased our food production in the world already just by the 100 parts per million increase that we've had in the last 100 years. Already, it's increased our worldwide food production by 12%.
Yeah, I was thinking of writing to Al Gore and asking if he can find any extra CO2, send it to me, and I'll grow a better garden.
Absolutely. As you said, greenhouses, they'll jack the carbon dioxide. Now, right now, we're at 370 parts per million, plus or minus a little bit. And greenhouses could go up to well over 1,000 parts per million and get double the amount of food production, tomatoes and cucumbers and all the rest. Then how come they could be so profitable when they have so intensive energy costs and so forth? It's because the carbon dioxide will double their yields. Double them, but give them better crops. I mean, these are really good, nutritious crops.
Yeah, they can't afford not to use it. But, you know, something else that I thought that this is just an idea. It seems to me that a much better strategy on this is they're still promoting global warming, even though the emphasis has gone toward climate change. And I think better than trying to refute global warming is to better to say how wonderful it is. You know, the last time global warming happened was about the year 1000. Some say that the temperature may have been as much as 10 degrees warmer than now. You know, Greenland, the Vikings were growing vineyards and making wine. They had row crops. They were exporting food. And the fields of Europe were so productive because of the better rainfall patterns and higher temperature that they pulled people out of the fields and they started building projects. Like most of those wonderful cathedrals in Europe would not exist if it hadn't been for global warming, because everybody would be scratching in the earth to try to make a living, and global warming relieved them of that.
Absolutely. You'll find that all the major advances in human history have come during the periods of warming.
And a horrible time.
During periods of cooling. In fact, the last cooling period we had was called the Little Ice Age back 1600s, 1700s, and 1800s. And there it was several degrees cooler than it is right now, and you had starvation, you had crop failures, you had major outbreaks of disease.
Right.
It was a horrible time on planet Earth to live.
Yeah.
And that's something that we need to consider. We could be heading back into one of those. I don't think so, but the sun is doing some things now that we've never seen it do in our modern history. So we're not sure exactly what is happening, but it is not behaving the way it should be behaving at this part of its cycle, and it's got a lot of people worried.
Yeah, the sunspot cycles are approximating what they were in Galileo's time. In fact, they didn't believe his original drawings because there were so few sunspots. But actually, that's why they had the great plague season then and the terrible conditions that existed. But, you know, I don't think it matters, and I'd like a suggestion as to what to do, because you made a statement earlier that there was this big bill, this bailout bills, and everybody so much wanted a solution, they just said, go ahead and do it. And that's really not true. The polls that I saw showed over 90% of the people opposed those bailouts, and they went right through. I think everything goes right through, no matter how many people oppose it.
Well, I think what we need to do is start getting rid of those congressmen and let them come right home. That's where they deserve to be. The other thing is we should have let AIG go down because they were holding the pension funds for all the congressmen. That's one reason we had, of course, to bail it out. Anything else you want to say, Michael, before we let you go? I should say to Michael from Riverside, not to Michael. Go ahead.
Okay. No, that's about it. Keep up the good work.
All right. I said, we are going to be down there next week speaking in Orange County and on Wednesday and in Granada, the Granada Forum on Thursday. If anybody in Southern California would like to know about those meetings, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. So we'll be giving talks on Wednesday and Thursday next week in Southern California. Hey, thanks very much for being with us, Michael.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, our guest this evening, Dr. Michael Kaufman. The DVD we're talking about is Global Warming, Emerging Science. I mean, if you ask for that, Global Warming and Emerging Science, of course, this is built upon science. Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth is built upon emotion, and it's not true. But it is part of this hatred of America, the effort to change and destroy our nation, to deindustrialize our nation, to lower the living standards of our people. America is under attack today. But it's not under attack from Al-Qaeda. It's under attack from people in Washington, D.C., in our scientific centers, perhaps even in the White House itself. Michael, why don't you go right ahead?
Well, you know, we're talking about Gore just before that small break, and I don't know how many of you in the listening audience realize this, but his Inconvenient Truth last year...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
happen. It's global warming. I believe it's the road to world government, or it has to do with world government under any circumstances. So we have both of his DVDs. We have book, it's called The Politically Incorrect View of Global Warming. Very well done. The Politically Incorrect View of Global Warming. We have another book called, I believe it's a Global Warming Allegore, or Global Warming Allegore. And if you want to get those, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV. War. And then, of course, we do have a four-tape set on global warming, and we think that these are conversations with very well-founded people, scientists, who really can put into focus the lies you're being told by the controlled media. And if there is ever an example that the media is controlled in the United States, it is the almost universal acceptance of the lie by the media and coming up with these stories over and over again. Why do they do this? Because at least the people in charge of the major media hate America. This is what it's all about. They can be tied into the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, and the Group of 30. There are less than 5,000 of them. They're elitists. Their dedication is to the one world government. Now, we actually put together something called the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. Gives you the background of all those organizations, tells you a great deal about them, and we hope that you'll want to get the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. I keep it by my side. It's important that I can always have the reference there to determine who are the members of these various subversive organizations, because they are subversive. They want to destroy our nation. That's what it's all about. And even though many of these people are high-ranking government officials, have sworn their loyalty to our Constitution, they don't believe in our Constitution. They have an intense hatred of America because many of them worship a different God. And if you want to understand the spiritual component of what we're talking about, why, of course, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is an excellent source of information. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. My talk on the Forbidden Secret, an excellent source of information. We carry a book written by, a number of books written by a Satanist. He was the sort of the mentor for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. His name was Manly P. Hall. We keep these on a special list. You have to ask for them by name. The Secret Teachings of All Ages. That's The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, where, of course, he will tell you who God really is. It's Lucifer. And then, of course, his book on the secret destiny of America, which talks about the secret societies, which for 3,000 years have been working to bring about a universal democracy. And he talks about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill and how it is the emblem of the esoteric or the secret societies. It's been that emblem for 3,000 years. So what is that emblem of the triangle that contains the glorified eye doing on the back of the dollar bill? There are a lot of our Christian ministries who have either been deceived or actually working for the other side. So we'll tell you the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, of course, is simply a Christian emblem, and it's really not true. The emblem on the back of the dollar bill is an occult emblem. And you really need to see the DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix. That's The Eye of the Phoenix, a very, very important source of information put out by our good friend Chris Pinto. It's almost 2.5 hours, 2¾ hours long, but very, very important. I didn't think he could really surpass his first two DVDs, the first one being The Secret Mystery DVD and the second being Riddles in Stone, but he did. And we recommend The Eye of the Phoenix to you. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Because if this country doesn't turn back to God, we're going to lose it. And then please pray for Radio Liberty. Oh, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg, a formerly senior editor of the New American Magazine. Now he, of course, writes blogs, writes books. We do carry his book, Liberty in Eclipse. That's Liberty in Eclipse, but a wonderful source of information, and we're very, very, very pleased to have him here with us on a regular basis at this time of the week on every Friday evening. William, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Dr. Stan, I'm always delighted to be with you. It's a blessing to be with you every week.
Well, tell me about, or tell our listeners about, what are the most important issues that we should be covering tonight?
I think we have to fixate once again on the chicanery going on in the financial system and the fact that in real time we're seeing the most remarkable revolution, sort of a coup de main, not so much a coup d'etat as a coup de main, where power is being consolidated in the hands of a handful of extraordinarily corrupt people who were part of the same pool of financial wizards who have inflicted this economic collapse on us. Really, in real time, we're seeing the outright theft of the entire economy and the creation of this all but unassailable oligarchy. Today, there's an Associated Press piece talking about this new sweeping system to overhaul, or the sweeping overhaul, rather, the financial system by Mr. Geithner. And as summarized in this piece, it says that the proposal will require, congressional approval, would represent a major expansion of federal authority over the financial system, would impose tougher standards on financial institutions judged to be so big that their failure would represent a risk to the entire system. Of course, that's an allusion to the situation with AIG, this mammoth investment and insurance company that is more or less the sucking chest wound on the entire financial system right now. To continue with this Associated Press piece, the new proposal by Mr. Geithner and the Obama administration would also extend federal regulations for the first time to all trading in financial derivatives, exotic financial instruments such as credit default swaps that were blamed for much of the damage and the meltdown. The administration also wants larger hedge funds to be required to register with the Securities and Exchange Commission. By the way, the SEC is that same wonderful oversight body that ignored 8 years of pointed, specific, anguished warnings about Bernie Madoff and his huge Ponzi scheme. It's not as if the power was insufficient to deal with the needs of exposing corrupt people like Mr. Madoff. They certainly had adequate authority. They had adequate means to expose and prosecute somebody like that. Just for political reasons, they didn't see fit to do so. And the SEC, of course, is the same organization that really had no interest in dealing with the monumental multi-layered fraud going on in Fannie and Freddie and these other government-sponsored quasi-private entities where people were making huge sums of money trading in the same kind of hopelessly corrupt, exotic, securitized mortgage debts that represent one of the major forms of terminal sickness in the financial system. But they're giving more power to the government because it has failed. As I incessantly say, government is the only enterprise that actually profits from its own failure. Every time government fails at a given task, it's not considered an indictment of either the system of government, the form of government, or the people who are exercising power through government. It's always considered to be an indictment of those who have given inadequate power to the government to carry out the task that it failed at so conspicuously. And here you're not merely dealing with a failure. Now, this isn't just garden variety ineptitude here. This is ineptitude as a cover, as a disguise for corruption, for deliberate, concerted criminal corruption. And the corruption itself is something of a shield or a mask for ambition. And the real ambition here, of course.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. William, go right ahead.
Yes. Saying you've got this multi-layered nastiness here where you start with ineptitude. The people who are managing or presumed to be managing the economy, the financial systems, to Geithner, Mr. Summers, Mr. Bernanke, and so forth, they would all be very pleased if we were to consider them to be merely inept. If you're dealing with world historic incompetence, that's a plea bargain that we'd be willing to take. They'd love to have people convinced that they're merely inept, albeit inept in a way that no previous generation of human beings has ever been inept. But you penetrate beyond the ineptitude, you find criminal corruption. You find deliberate, systemic criminal corruption of the sort that was going on at all these politically favored funds and enterprises, the American International Group, or EIG, being very symbolic of that type of operation. But you penetrate beneath the criminal corruption, and you end up with really nasty, vaunting ambition to the point of megalomania. And this week, for the first time in the history of our country, the administration, the sitting presidential administration, has started to examine in public and to muse about the supposed wisdom of a new global currency, of a global currency that would be issued presumably by a global banking or global financial authority. And there was a great deal of equivocation and some apparent contradiction between Mr. Obama and Timothy Geithner. Mr. Geithner, speaking to the Council on Foreign Relations, said he was quite open to the suggestion, which was offered earlier this week by Red China, that there be a new international reserve currency that would replace the dollar. And this followed, actually it didn't follow, I believe, that it precipitated a comment from Mr. Obama during a press conference to the effect that he wasn't, basically, if I remember correctly, he's not on the same page with Mr. Geithner. I know that Mr. Gibbs, the press spokesman for the White House, said that this is the sort of thing that might have some merit, but they weren't looking at this seriously. In other words, they're all over the map here. They're very equivocal about what they want to do about this hugely subversive and potentially suicidal move to replace the dollar with a global reserve currency that would be issued by a new global authority. But the fact is, they're already destroying what remains of the value of the dollar, irrespective of their intention. That's what we're going to end up with when you start shoveling trillions of dollars after trillions of dollars into these sinkholes that are the AIGs of the world and the banks both here in the United States and overseas that are the counterparties to AIG.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan. William was just simply talking about a remark that was made before the Council on Foreign Relations this last week by Timothy Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury, to the effect that he would be willing to consider, of course, you know, having another reserve currency and replacing the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Now, if that were to happen, then all the trillions of dollars out there being held by every other country would come flooding back in here and would literally destroy the value of our currency overnight, and everything you've ever worked for, and your pension funds, and your annuities, and your insurance policies, and everything you have, your bonds and stocks, would simply be destroyed within a matter of a day or two. But apparently, President Obama, at least his spokesman, was very unhappy about that, saying, well, of course, they did not necessarily go about that. I agree with that. So Timothy Geithner had to backpedal. But you see, Timothy Geithner's loyalty is not to the United States. He is a key member of the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderbergers, and Group of 30. I mean, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, as I like to call them, are these four subversive organizations whose loyalty is not to the United States. But the question is, you know, who's really in charge? Is Timothy Geithner telling the president what to do? Is the president telling Timothy what to do? And, of course, what is going to happen to the stability of our currency? Because if it is replaced as reserve currency of the world, why, forget about the stability of our currency, and, of course, forget about the sovereignty of our nation. Go ahead.
Well, it's useful to recall that about 14 months ago, speaking at a conference that was sponsored, if I remember correctly, by the Saudi government, Mr. Greenspan, the destroyer of worlds, as I like to refer to him, the person who really presided over this riotous orgy of inflation that created the housing bubble. And once the tech bubble burst in 2000, he immediately inflated the housing and mortgage bubble. but he's the person most responsible for the greatest diminution in the purchasing power of the dollar of any individual who's ever served in government or in a quasi-governmental function, the Federal Reserve not strictly speaking being a governmental entity. But he was speaking at this conference over in the Gulf region in the Middle East about 14 months ago, and he frankly and candidly told the representatives of these petromonarchies that they should start pulling out of the dollar because the dollar's value had been destroyed. And who better to speak to that issue than Mr. Greenspan, the destroyer of the same value of the dollar? And so you've got Mr. Geithner now as the Treasury Secretary and the de facto dictator of the economy. That's a role that's not widely appreciated. They talk about adding more power to the Treasury Department to regulate the financial system and the economy. That's a little like adding luster to the sun or gilding gold, except to be the opposite of gilding gold here. They want to have nothing to do with gold. The point is he already has plenary authority to do anything he sees appropriate with funds that will be provided to him by the Federal Reserve. What they're trying to do is they're trying to give him regulatory authority that would be concomitant with the authority that he has to distribute money on various entities within the financial system. But I'll come back to that in a second. But the really important point here is that this past week, I believe it's almost a year to the day, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and take a look at my notes. But a year ago, Mr. Greenspan, the chief destroyer of the dollar's value, was telling people overseas to get out of the dollar. This week, almost a year to the day after Greenspan's behavior overseas, really utterly reprehensible, subversive, traitorous, treasonous behavior, you have Mr. Geithner openly musing about the idea of displacing the dollar as the reserve currency. That's basically the same message. They're both saying that the dollar is dead, and they're eager to see some alternative architecture put in place, and it would probably be built out of the existing framework of the so-called special drawing rights from the IMF, which are a form of, for lack of a better way of putting it, it's almost like a type of, if I remember how this works, a type of cashier's check that the IMF can issue when it's making transfer payments or subsidy payments to various governments that are receiving payouts from the IMF. And they circulate as if they had real money, and basically what they want to do, if I understand this correctly, is use this as the specimen from which they would clone this new global currency.
What they're really talking about is a new fiat money currency under a different authority. There's no difference at all, other than the fact that our currency would become worthless, this new currency would be declared to have worth, and it would be backed up by the United Nations. But it would simply be one fiat currency replacing another one, but supposedly at least the International Monetary Fund would act responsibly, whereas of course everybody in the world believes that the United States is acting irresponsibly, and everybody in the United States is absolutely correct.
Yes.
Our leaders are doing everything they can to destroy the value of our currency, and I would simply ask, why would they do that if they're loyal to America? Or maybe we should remember that, of course, Mr. Obama sat for some 20 years in the congregation of Reverend Wright's church, and Reverend Wright hated America. And certainly many of his criticisms were valid, but it was always G damn America.
Yeah.
Yeah, Reverend Wright hated America. Why would anybody who loved America, or even you wanted to try to preserve America, sit in the congregation and hear that week after week? And what's even more amazing is that Barack Obama addressed that as a political candidate. He talked about race. Had nothing to do with race. It had to do with race relations. It had everything to do with hatred of America. And today this man inhabits our White House. Go right ahead.
Of course, the appropriate approach, if you understand the soundness of some of what Reverend Wright said, and I agree that you're dealing with somebody whose basic disposition toward our country is that of unfettered antagonism and largely untutored antagonism, but inasmuch as he was correct about some things, some limited elements of his harangue had some validity, the proper approach is to say, God forgive America, if you believe that America, at working corporately through the government that presumes to represent us, is guilty of these world historic crimes. The proper approach should be one of penitence rather than simple abjuration and denunciation of the country as such, or to say that the government, that rules us is worthy of divine judgment, or to say that some elements working through the government that rules us are worthy of divine censure and condemnation, rather than issuing a broad brush condemnation of the country and the people, the institutions, the principles, which of course all those things are what we're trying to save here from the corruption and the criminal influence of the people who are working through the government in defiance of our Constitution and our heritage to consolidate power. And they don't see anything at all amiss with treating people as being infinitely disposable. And it's like you say, Dr. Stan, not a matter of racial or ethnic background. This is an enemy. When we're talking about the shadow government that you refer to that operates through our government, our duly constituted government, these are people who are, I believe, utterly indifferent to matters of melanin content or ethnic origin. They simply see everybody but those who are part of their own ranks as being valuable only in as much as we contribute to their ambitions. They look upon us as raw material. They don't have any particular compunctions or any particular hang-ups about the idea of disposing of people from any ethnic background in whatever quantity would be necessary in order to satisfy their ambitions. And that's something that I hope people will start to understand. There's a real effort underway, and this is something you and I have talked about, and we really cannot overstate or exaggerate the importance of this particular gambit which is being played right now to set people against each other on the basis of race and ethnicity. And this is something that is going to become much more volatile, much more troublesome as the economic collapse deepens and we find ourselves stuck in the morass of stagflation, and people are going to be preached to by the likes of Reverend Wright on the one side and by counterparts of different, nominally different political persuasions, that we should be looking upon each other from a zero-sum position, which is that we'll all be put into convenient little categories prescribed by the government according to ethnicity or religion or some other signifier, and that to the extent that somebody from another group benefits, it's a situation where we suffer proportionate to their prosperity. And that's the nastiest trick that's played by those who seek to create empires or seek to create monolithic Leviathan states. The old game of divide and conquer, but it's something that is being played in the key of race and ethnicity, which lends an even bloodier subtext to the whole exercise. And this is something that is happening overseas in Europe right now. There's a growing unease that's beginning to manifest itself as really embittered antagonisms along the fissures of ethnicity and class and culture in a lot of the nations in Europe, or a lot of the former nations of what is now the Eurozone. They're finding themselves starting to fall apart along those stress lines as the economic crisis deepens. And that's the sort of thing that's happened traditionally in the Balkans and Central Europe and, of course, in the former Soviet Union. You have all kinds of problems of that sort. But we're not immune to that. I mean, we're a very large, heterogeneous nation with all kinds of potential for mischief by the type of people who love to sow that type of conflict. And it's like I say, it would be wonderful if people would ignore the efforts to set us off against each other on the basis of ethnicity and instead focus our efforts on understanding how it is that we're being played by these people, the people who orchestrate financial crises of the sort that we're dealing with right now, Mr. Geithner being a perfect example of that loathsome cohort. Here he is a year after Greenspan said to get out of the dollar. Mr. Geithner is saying, yes, let's get rid of the dollar. And the unspoken corollary here is, who cares what this does to the rest of, to the remnant of the middle class? You know, that's simply the price we're going to have to pay in pursuit of our global ambition.
Well, I think we're in real trouble, but we're going to be talking more about this. Our guest this evening is William Grigg, and we'll be back in just a moment as to explore further what's happening to our monetary system. Ladies and gentlemen, the monetary system of the whole world is collapsing today. This is not happening by accident, in my opinion. It's happening by intent. It is going to be used as a vehicle to bring about a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and a one-world religion. We'll be right back in just a moment. Go right ahead, William.
You know, there already is a global currency, of course, and that currency is gold. And silver, of course, is also accepted pretty much everywhere you go. If we were talking about the idea of creating a universal standard of measure that would be conducive to freedom and international peace and commerce and trade, if we were talking about a universal standard of commerce, universal currency standard that would conduce to national independence, we'd reevaluate the gold standard and would embrace it. But of course, we're moving in exactly the opposite direction, where we're talking about not merely universalizing fiat currency, which right now is the case. I mean, we have a universal fiat currency. The dollar is the global reserve currency. But we're talking about one that would be completely foreign to the idea of nationhood. That's a really interesting thing when you think about the way that a currency, a discrete currency, one that is issued by the government of an independent country with a definable independent history and culture, that's a very important thing when you're talking about doing away with that and having this universal fiat currency to replace the dollar. The dollar, of course, grew out of previous existing currencies that were rooted in the idea that gold and silver are commodities of universal acceptability. And every other currency of European provenance, of course, has that same heritage. But you had the various nations issue their own redeemable currencies that had something to do, in the case of every national currency, with a heritage that was distinctive to that particular country. Here in the United States, of course, the dollar, which is now a fiat currency that's an instrument of fraud and debt, that is to say fraudulent debt, and debts fraudulently paid and collected upon, it still bears the impress of a definable national heritage and history. You take a look, of course, at George Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln and Hamilton and the others who adorn the various currencies, Jackson on the 20, and you've got a certain sense that this is a currency issued by a particular country with particular institutions and a specific way of looking at the world. And, of course, that's very important as an expression of a shared culture and a shared heritage. If you look at the euro, on the other hand, this is a point I made before, and it was first made to me when I was talking with a good friend of mine who's a former currency trader and a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Ann Williamson. She said, if you take a look at the euro, it's not really decorated so much as disfigured with pictures of people who never lived and buildings that have never been built and entities that have never existed, because the European Union had no history. It was a complete fabrication. It was an artifact of a ruling elite that wants to alienate people from their history and to use them, once again, as raw material in building this utopian society in which the people who would be the architects would have total power, and the rest of us would simply be ordered hither and yon and used as they see fit. And if you talk about a global currency, it's the same idea, that we'd have a currency that would have no depth in any experience of any nation or any people, but rather would be the instrument of a global social engineering elite that would...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William's talking about this idea of coming up now with a global currency. Who will issue it? Well, maybe it'll be the International Monetary Fund. Of course, there's another theory that maybe we should take it just a basket of currencies, but they're all fiat currencies, and they're all subject to the prejudice and the irresponsibility of men. That's the beauty of gold, is that it doesn't matter how irresponsible men are, it is an anchor for the monetary system. It's like a ship at sea. A ship is at sea and you're in danger of being washed up on the rocks, you want to get your anchor down, and that's what gold is. We are in a monetary sea. Gold is the anchor, and of course that's the one thing the politicians don't want. And the real reason is because the captain of our ship of state, and I would not limit this to Barack Obama, but to a series of captains, all whom have been controlled by this financial elite that wants to rule the world. Their purpose is to have no anchor, to dash the ship of state upon the rocks, and then, of course, to build this new and wonderful ship, which they will control, that would rule the whole of the world. So we're in real trouble because we have irresponsible leaders who march to a different drumbeat, because I fear that some of them, or many of them, dream, pardon me, worship a different god, because, go right ahead.
Yeah, that once again ties into the whole idea of how national currency is an expression of a national heritage and a set of ideals. I mean, our currency is so completely adulterated as to be worthless, but still, if you take a look at these gaudily decorated pieces of rag paper that the government ruling us insists that we call money, they still, in terms of the chosen personages who adorn them and the chosen motifs that are used to illustrate the various increments of currency, they're still rooted in a definable national heritage. And so if you're talking about having a global currency, they're going to have to clean the slate of all these various concepts that are shared by not only our nation, but they're shared by the inhabitants of every other nation to be part of the system. And it would be the first universal currency that really has no tie either conceptually or in terms of its origins to gold. You know, the one genuinely universal currency. And actually, when I say universal, there were exceptions. I mean, when the conquistadors showed up and introduced themselves to my Aztec ancestors, weren't all that enamored with gold. They used cocoa beans. They used cocoa beans as their increment of measure. And when Montezuma was asked by Cortez when Cortez asked Montezuma to inspect the treasuries of the Aztec Empire, Montezuma took him to a huge room in which coca beans were stacked to the ceiling. And Cortez said, well, that's not what I had. I wanted to see your gold. And Montezuma was puzzled. He said, you mean this worthless stuff that we use as baubles for playthings and so forth? Yeah, well, they weren't on the gold standard. They were on the coca bean standard, but at least it was something that was useful. It had some definable value, and was considered by that civilization to be valuable and transmissible and divisible, and it's something that had meaningful value to that civilization. They didn't use gold or silver for the purposes that the Spaniards did. But apart from a couple of exceptions like that, pretty much everywhere, certainly in the Western world, in Western tradition, gold and silver have had universal value. And now, of course, the only thing that backs the dollar is the force behind the legal tender laws that require that we use it as payment for debt and payment for commercial transactions. And if you have a global fiat currency, in principle, you'd have to have some kind of a global entity with sufficient force as to compel people to accept that currency in defiance of the use of something better. And I suspect that what you would have in the case of a Globo or a Bancor or some other UN-issued currency or some currency issued for the IMF or another UN affiliate, you'd have something that would literally have to be rammed down the throats of a lot of recalcitrant countries, a lot of recalcitrant nations. And that would cause no end of strife and no end of bloodshed, because a lot of people are not going to give up their what they have earned, what they have saved, what little they've been able to scrape together and preserve from the predatory interest of government. They're not going to turn it over and accept some new spurious currency that would involve the loss of a great deal of what they had earned and saved. You take a look at what happened in these various countries that accepted the euro. A lot of these places where they have the changeover, people lost a great deal of their earnings, their savings, because they were forced to accept the euro at a parity that didn't translate directly. And so their bank accounts suffered, their earnings suffered, their standard of living suffered. And the same thing would happen, of course, with the global fiat currency that would be instantly inflatable. There'd be no stability in prices, there'd be no stability in earnings. That's a perfect recipe for universal social upheaval and turmoil. And so even if you had people willing to take this without a struggle, you're still going to have all kinds of turmoil, and turmoil will lead to authoritarian crackdowns. And of course, there are people who relish that kind of thing. A few weeks ago, we mentioned this.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with William Grigg.
God bless America, land that
Well, William, go right ahead.
Yep. A few weeks ago, we mentioned this interview that Zbigniew Brzezinski gave on Morning Joe. I believe it's the CNBC program of Joe Scarborough. And Mika Brzezinski, who is the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Mr. Brzezinski is important for a couple of reasons, most notably because he was the founder, the co-founder with David Rockefeller, the Trilateral Commission. And the conceptual architect of the Trilateral Commission is Between Two Ages. And he was talking several weeks ago, just as the Wall Street stock dive began its really precipitous action. You had, since last August, we've seen the stock market lose at one point more than half of its stated value. And now it's a little, it's arisen in what I call a bear trap rally. It's risen back to a little bit more than half of its peak of a couple of years ago. But when the stock market started to swoon a few months ago, about 6 weeks ago, Zbigniew Brzezinski was on this program talking about people losing everything and the innate destabilizing effect that has on a society. And he said that right now we had to get busy with some kind of massive forced redistribution of wealth, because otherwise there might be riots. And the thing that I found so staggeringly raised about that comment, of course, was that this, of course, is a blackmail demand. The idea being that if you don't do A, B, or C, there are going to be riots. People are going to be let loose to terrorize people on the streets. And, of course, that's going to lead to reciprocal authoritarian action by the government in a way that will have a ratcheting effect in building up the tyrannical influence of government in our lives and also increasing the sense of insecurity in persons and property. And it creates a self-reinforcing cycle that eventually leads to outright totalitarianism and the destruction of what remains of what had been a relatively free market. But the fact that Brzezinski was being so blatant and playing that card on cable television left me somewhat shaken up, because usually they're a little bit more subtle in the way that they present their demands. But that really set the tone for a lot of what we have been hearing and seeing from these people. I mean, when AIG demanded $30 billion to complement the tens of billions, scores of billions of dollars it was given from taxpayers last fall by Henry Paulson, who was the predecessor there as the economic dictator before Timothy Geithner, when AIG demanded $30 billion, it did so in the form of what could only be considered a combination of a stick-up and a ransom note. It sent a 21-page document to the Treasury Department.
Hold that thought. We want to get, and I want our listeners to hear about this. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is William Grigg, and he's just talking about when AIG sent a note to the Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Paulson, you know, demanding money. AIG, of course, was the American Investment Group, the largest insurance company in the world, but of course it had gotten into all of these derivatives and all sorts of other creative financial situations, and of course it really, of course, held insurance policies, funds for communities all across America. I mean, yes, this is a very, very powerful organization, and now they're facing bankruptcy. They've got all these derivative contracts, and they're losing on these contracts. They're running out of money. They don't have money to cover their insurance liabilities, the money that's been deposited with them from pension funds from communities all across America. And understanding even they have a lot of the pension funds of government employees and horrors of congressmen. We couldn't let that company go down, but you pick up the story there.
Yeah, they're really the Gordian knot, if you will, of this entire financial system. And you cut the Gordian knot. I mean, they're trying to untangle the Gordian knot rather than allow it to be cut. And they're trying to untangle the Gordian knot. That's one of the reasons that they talk about retaining these specialists in computing and creating the hedge funds through AIG. They're called quants, Q-U-A-N-T-S. That's the term of art that's an abbreviation of quantification specialists, I believe. But these are the people who devised the computer models that generated these derivatives. And they're talking now about keeping these people on board at AIG because they have the special skill set that's necessary in order to unwind these incalculably complicated financial instruments. When, of course, if AIG had gone through bankruptcy court, the bankruptcy court would have assigned people who had sufficient acumen to unwind these, and they would have been unwound in a way that was not politically or financially self-interested on the part of the people who were doing the auditing. But when AIG presented its demands a few weeks ago for $30 billion to complement the $130 or $135 billion it received last fall, they issued a 21-page report that was sent to the Treasury Department that talked about what was called systemic risk. The idea that as a matter of fact, the title of that document was AIG, Is the Risk Systemic? And what it said was that because AIG was uniquely situated at the middle of what they called the interlinkages and interdependencies in the international financial system, that if AIG were allowed to fail, the whole system would be brought down, and that the dollar itself would collapse, and that we'd end up with basically financial Armageddon. And the operative phrase here was, if one player is eliminated or a cluster of failures occurs at once, the entire system will come down. Now, this is all based upon fraud, and they're trying to get people to ignore the fundamental fraud at the heart of this. And that fraud is based upon the fact that AIG got involved in insuring the same bundles of bad mortgage and securitized debt obligations that they were using as operating capital. So they were really in a terrible situation. It's moral hazard, pretty much taken to the point of reducto ad absurdism. And these collateralized debt obligations or these securitized mortgage bonds were put together in such a way that they would group a collection of really bad mortgages that are going bad as they were put on the books. The example that Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone gave was, you've got people who were writing mortgage loans, subprime loans and balloon loans and ARM and reverse amortization mortgages and so forth to strippers and Taco Bell clerks and people who obviously didn't qualify for conventional mortgages. So those were bad the instant that the signatures were affixed to the documents. You'd bundle those with mortgages that were good. And then you would generate a computer model in which you would say, okay, on account of the good mortgages that are part of this collateralized or this securitized bond, the securitized package of debt, on the basis of the good mortgages, the risk is very low. So they deserve a AAA rating. But on the basis of the bad mortgages that are part of the same package, the risk is very high. And so you could have really good returns on this because it's a riskier form of debt. And the riskier the form of debt, the more that you stand to gain in the investment markets by taking on the riskier debt. So they coupled supposedly the advantages of low risk and high risk, and of course what that means is that you've got a situation where a little bit of leavens the whole lump, as the scriptures say. You've got the bad debts that are going to cause the good debts to go bad because of the way that the system was structured. But it reminds me a little bit of what they were trafficking in, these really bizarre financial instruments. Reminds me of something that vice and narcotics investigators call a flash roll. A flash roll is a wad of bills that you use to impress people. And so what you do if you want to impress people is you get a couple of $100 bills, or maybe even a $100 bill and a 50, and then you wrap them around a great big pile of $1 bills. So it looks as if, okay, this guy's peeling hundreds off this big roll of $100 bills. He's obviously a very important player. But all you see, of course, is the $100 bill, maybe a couple of them, and the 50 at the outside, and on the inside you've got nothing but $1 bills. Well, the difference between that type of a flash roll and what you're talking about here that AIG was trafficking in is that the flash roll that AIG was trafficking in had a $100 bill at the outside, and then in the middle of it you had a bunch of counterfeit notes and a bunch of slips of blank paper. It was something even less valuable than that. And they were using that, of course, to cook their books and inflate their profit statements. And at one point, a couple of years ago, Maurice Hank Greenberg, who at the time was the CEO of AIG and now is the ex-CEO, he actually stole some assets of that group after he was ousted as CEO and set up his own rump company within the corporate structure. And I don't know how that works. I don't know how that works legally. Mr. Greenberg, of course, is somebody who's very close to the ruling elite in communist China. He's also a former high-ranking official of the Council on Foreign Relations. But Mr. Greenberg, last year, when they were bailing out AIG, admitted to the Treasury Department that they had that overstated the value of the company by at least 90%, that it was worth maybe one-tenth of what it was supposed to be worth on paper, because it had lost 90% of its value. And my belief is that he knew at the time that it was pretty much worthless, that they'd completely destroyed whatever value there was through these criminally fraudulent practices. And in doing so, they had managed to imperil pretty much the entire structure of the financial system. You talk about the pension funds, you talk about the insurance funds that were being managed through AIG. The counterparties, that is to say the people they did business with, include pretty much anybody of any stature in the banking and financial world. And so what's been happening is that AIG is being used now. It's being kept alive basically as a pass-through. These huge amounts of money that are being paid to AIG that are being stolen from the taxpayers, either through direct transfers of wealth or through inflation, which steals the value of what we have earned and saved, they're being paid to the counterparties here in the United States, such as Goldman Sachs and the familiar retinue of big banks, but also banks overseas. And the thing I find really interesting about this is that one of the banks receiving payouts through AIG is the United Bank of Switzerland, UBS. And so you have this really anomalous situation where the same government, the same federal government that is stealing from American taxpayers to pay these transfer payments through AIG to the United Bank of Switzerland is putting pressure on the United Bank of Switzerland to open its books so they can go after taxpayers who've been putting their money in Swiss accounts to protect that money from the same government that is stealing the money to put into other bank accounts in UBS on behalf of people connected to AIG and the counterparties.
I think even more interesting than that is that the man who made this agreement to nationalize AIG was Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, Henry Paulson had formerly been the CEO of Goldman Sachs, and he left a job that was paying him $40 million a year to take an insignificant job, certainly as Secretary of the Treasury, at $180,000 a year. Now, why would any man in his right mind give up a job that was paying him $40 million a year to take a job that would pay him $180 million a year? Well, of course, Henry Paulson, by agreeing to nationalize AIG, was then able, of course, to give the money to AIG, and then AIG passed it through to Goldman Sachs, and it got about $10 billion,
yeah,
at least $10 billion, of which $5 billion went for bonuses. We talk about the bonuses AIG paid of $165 million, and everybody is incensed. But when was the last time you heard about the $5 billion that Goldman Sachs had put out paying bonuses for this last year,
yeah,
with the money that was sent to them by the American taxpayers? And I wonder how the American taxpayer is going to feel when he realizes he's been raped and pillaged by Henry Paulson, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and this whole group of people, Timothy Geithner, member of the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderbergers, Group of 30, there's a little group I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness. They run this country, and they run it as if it's simply a coin machine for them and their friends. But go right ahead.
Yeah. The other thing I find really interesting about this, you talk about the fact that the taxpayers being raped and pillaged here, is the way that the debate is being contained and redirected by those in charge of molding acceptable opinion here. We had this nauseating spectacle about a week ago when the AIG bonuses were first given widespread publicity, of the Congress, I believe 283 members of the House of Representatives voted for what was called a clawback measure, which would permit the federal government to tax at, I think, 90% or higher, the specific bonuses that were paid out to the AIG officials in question. Now, I made it pretty clear, I have no brief for the people who received those bonuses. And the reason why I don't, first of all, is because it seems to me bizarre that you'd be awarding bonuses to people who have presided over the complete destruction of the value of a company, But secondly, these bonuses are being paid with money that was extorted from the taxpayers. And so in terms of ontogeny, the funds in question simply are illegitimate. They shouldn't be there. But that being said, you've got something even worse here, where the Congress of the United States, which of course is composed of people who've sworn an oath in God's name to uphold the Constitution, passes a measure which is summarily and facially unconstitutional simply out of a sense of a placating pseudo-populist rage. You cannot pass a measure which criminalizes a specific group of people to the exception of everybody else. That's called the Bill of Attainder. It is utterly, facially unconstitutional. You cannot criminalize something that was not criminal behavior at the time that that behavior occurred. That's called the ex post facto law. That, likewise, is completely unconstitutional. But now they have created in their actions the precedent the federal government is going to get into the business now of targeting specific groups of people, and it doesn't have to be people working for AIG, and it doesn't have to be extravagantly wealthy people who are involved in devising pornographically complicated financial instruments. It could be anybody who for whatever reason is targeted and made an example of for the purpose of public instruction by our rulers. They're getting in the business now of criminalizing people that the government doesn't like, and they're getting in the business now of passing ex post facto laws and providing the means where the government can swoop in and enforce ex post facto laws that are completely foreign to 800 years of Anglo-Saxon liberty under law. And the thing that I find most disgusting about this, of course, is you look at the way that this whole thing was set up with the Obama administration and Senator Dodd putting that poison pill in that legislation, creating the bailout, and then somehow triggering the shocked and disgusted discovery of this measure that was lying there in plain sight as a way of precipitating this outrage. And then capitalizing that outrage to pass these ex post facto Bill of Attainder laws that are so unconstitutional, that's a really dramatic enhancement of the power of the government that it is in its own way as troubling as the effective destruction of habeas corpus that occurred a couple of years ago during the reign of President Bush and the Republican-led Congress when, through the Military Commissions Act, they decided that they're going to tear great big exceptions of the habeas corpus guarantee, which is the principle saying that the government cannot simply lock you up. The government has to press charges against you or prefer charges against you within a specific deadline, or you have to be let go. You can't simply be imprisoned without judicial review and due process and the prospect of a trial. Well, now they're saying that in addition to that, we're going to get in the business of criminalizing things after the fact and targeting specific people for laws that are not of general application. And so, once again, you see the way that the government, having failed, we're told, is capitalizing on its own failure to expand its own powers in ways that are greatly inimical to liberty, not just to the disgusting people who work for AIG and have profited so handsomely off of transfer payments from taxpayers, but this, of course, would be inimical for the liberty of everybody. And that's another thing that we're going to see a lot more of here is the riling of type of facile populist sentiment, and then the very quick redirection of that sentiment at targets that the government will choose, as opposed to seeing people from a genuinely independent point of view being educated and organized to limit what the government can do, and then to reduce the power of government over the economy, over the financial system, and certainly over our individual lives. That's a completely different type of action. That's what we need. What we need are people who understand really that nothing is gonna help us. No benefit will accrue to us if we simply keep giving more power to the people who are the architects of this same catastrophe. But the people who are in charge of molding public opinion, as you never cease to remind us, Dr. Stan, they're very much interested in making sure that people are deluded into thinking that they're acting for themselves and acting in their best interest when they're actually performing according to the script that's being written for them by the same people who are pulling the strings of the political system. So that's where our challenge resides right now, is to make sure that people understand the difference between being manipulated into helping our enemies obtain more power on the one hand, and on the other hand, being educated as to what our enemies have done to us and how we have to take power out of their hands on the other.
And I think it was really amazing how through the propaganda they incensed the people against, of course, these exorbitant bonuses. But, of course, the solution was to very gut our Constitution.
Yeah.
And then everybody feels better, and then Obama says he's going to would not go along with the legislation. The legislation was wrong. And yet it was his own administration that actually got Senator Dodd actually to put in the stipulation that they could go ahead and do this. Over the objection of Congress, they snuck a little bit in there. The Obama administration put pressure on Senator Dodd. Senator Dodd did it. He doesn't deserve to be a senator, and the people within the Obama administration are certainly unworthy of our trust. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program tonight with William Green. Well, William, before we go on, would you like to, of course, get your web page out there? We just got so enthralled with talking to you that we forgot to get the information out.
I do appreciate that. The easiest way to find what I have to say about pretty much everything of interest in terms of public policy is to go to willgrigg.com. Once again, that's willgrigg, willgrigg.com. On the right-hand side of that web page, there's a list of external links. The very first one, the top of that list, will take the reader to Pro Libertate, which is my weekly or daily blog. I've not updated it in the last couple of days because I've been on the road with my family, but I generally try to update it between 3 and 5 times a week with an essay that's a 1,200 to 2,000 words worth of length. And usually what I'm writing about would be matters having to do with individual liberty and how it's threatened, it's under siege, how it's in some ways all but extinct, and suggestions as to what we can do in order to reclaim what has been taken from us in terms of the liberties that our Creator had invested in us. That's, I think, the single biggest obsession of my life, quite frankly, is the question of individual liberty. And that's something I write about obsessively and hopefully in an interesting way in Pro Libertate. And at the end of every essay, there's photograph or a copy of the cover illustration of my most recent book, Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State, and also a hot link that people can click that will take them to Amazon.com to purchase the book if they're interested in buying it. It's also available through Radio Liberty, and I'm really grateful, Dr. Sand, that you and your associates are carrying it. I'm working on a couple of other book programs, or book projects, rather, right now, and as soon as I have made some headway on those projects, I'll let you know what to expect in terms of their availability and the subject matter, and that's something that will be made known through Pro Libertate and willgrigg.com.
Well, very good. Well, we've got about 30 seconds to wrap up the program before I let you go tonight. Well,
what I'd like to say is, nil disperandum, do not despair. One of the luxuries of our circumstance right now is that the masks are falling, the pretense is evaporating, and people are starting to understand the importance of many of the things that they usually didn't listen to, or they're usually not inclined to listen to when times are better. So the times that we're living in are tough and challenging, but amid the tough and challenging times, people are finding out that reality is not optional, and that is an ironic blessing.
And I think we have the greatest opportunity of my lifetime, and remember, I've been at this for 47 years, but the greatest opportunity of my lifetime to reach the American people, because they're not going to listen until times get bad. They're going to get bad. Let's be there to inform them. Good night. God bless. We'll talk to you next week.
God bless. Take care.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoy our weekly conversations with William Grigg as much as I do. And, of course, you really need to understand that this whole financial situation has been created. And if you have any question on how it was done and who did it, you, of course, need to get my newsletters. They're available at RadioLiberty.com, November and December of 2008, January of 2009. That's www.RadioLiberty.com. Thank goodness for the Internet. Give us an opportunity to get the information from my home to yours. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. This is how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours a day and then a weekend program. And we have over 60 outlets every week. At least somewhere in America, people are learning the truth. And we do hope that many of you out there would want to join the Radio Liberty of supporters or the Radio Liberty family of supporters or subscribe to the newsletter. If you haven't laid in a supply of long-term storage food, or you'd like to get a Berkey water filter, or get the health products that you would need to keep your immune system up and your nutrition up in case of an emergency, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you the information. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, you need to get a copy of our DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix. It goes into the occult, satanic emblems on the back of the dollar bill, and of course Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who put them there and why he put them there. So that's The Eye of the Phoenix. We carry a number of other excellent DVDs. I've got one by Dr. Russ Blaylock called Vaccination and Brain Development. We have a new set of a DVD, 4-tape set and book on the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. We think it's important. We actually have a complete set of information, a special on the assassination, the murder, or perhaps simply the incarceration of Congressman Larry McDonald. We have information certainly on the death of Martin Luther King. We have a book and a 4-tape set, a 4-CD set. We have information on the sinking or the attempt on the part of the people at the highest levels of our government to sink the USS Liberty and, of course, to kill all of the servicemen on board so we would have an excuse to go to war with Egypt during the 1967 war. Certainly, we have a 4-CD set. We have a DVD, we have a video, we have a syllabus, or you can get the USS Liberty special. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You need to get this information. You have our permission to copy anything that we have made. Now, some of the things that other people have made, we can't give you permission to copy, but the things we have made, we encourage you to copy them. Alex Jones puts out that same offer, and we do carry a lot of Alex's DVDs. And, of course, you can certainly go to our website and see the ones there on the Bilderbergers and on the Bohemian Grove and on Terror Storm. And we will be carrying his most recent DVD, The Obama Deception. That's The Obama Deception. You need to get this information. You need to help us get it out. So go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our radio programs on the Internet. We'll point you to the shortwave. The Internet programs are live. They're on the satellite. They're archived. They're on blog. They're on MP3. Get the information, and then please try to get other people listening. We're growing an audience all across America. People looking for the truth, and we've got the truth. Why did the people in charge of our government, that's what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Group of 30, the Trilateral Commission, why did they finance and bring about this financial crisis? Because they want to use the crisis to bring down the entire financial structure of the world. And then out of that chaos will come this one world government, which is what they've been working for since their inception. Because, you see, their loyalty is not to America, but to this internationalist dream. And behind that are powerful spirits of forces that worship a different God. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty.